You're listening to The Morning Drip, South Georgia's number one morning show. For independent voices and liberated perspectives, got a question or comment, you can text the show at 229-234-1307. 229-234-1307.
Good morning, South Georgia. It's time for The Morning Drip on WRTO.FM Radio Tift. I'm Donovan, bringing you the morning dose of caffeine, conversation, and common sense. And we are still in Spooktober. Good morning, everybody. It is Thursday, October something or another. It's October 16th. Hope you're doing well. Hope you've had a great week so far. Looking forward to the weekend. I think the weather's going to be okay for this weekend down here in South Central Georgia. Basically, just looking at the quick weather forecast here using the Carrot app on my phone. Today's high is going to be 83. Looks like we got a little bit of fog this morning. Tomorrow's high is supposed to be 80, sunny. Saturday, 82, sunny. And Sunday, a little bit of rain. High of 81. And then we start dipping down into the high 70s and back into the low 80s. And next week looks like to be a roller coaster, but honestly, it's too far out to really know. You get about past four days. It's difficult to count on the weather forecast. All right, let's start off this morning. The 2025 Georgia National Fair drew a record 612,706 visitors during its run from October the 2nd through the 12th, marking the highest attendance in over a decade. The event continues to play a major role in boosting Central Georgia's economy, estimated at $35 million in 2024. As comparison, you know, we're looking at 2025, as we've already said, 612,706. Last year was 545,382. 2023 was 487,874. 2019 was a pre-COVID peak of 565,533 attendees. This year's theme was Faradise in America 250, with Governor Brian Kemp serving as keynote speaker at the opening ceremony. They had attractions that included such things as fair food, carnival rides, free concerts, educational exhibits highlighting Georgia's top industry, agriculture. The Georgia Grown Showcase and youth livestock shows gave local producers and students a platform to exhibit their work. Organizers called this fair a cornerstone event that supports youth development, education, and family traditions. And the 2026 Georgia National Fair is already scheduled for October 8th through the 18th at the Georgia National Fairgrounds in Perry, Georgia. I have never been. Never been. I'm just not a fair guy. I don't know. Maybe when I was younger, but definitely not now. I am not a fair guy. I don't relish the idea of walking around for a couple of hours looking at stuff like that. I don't know. It's just me. Did you go? Let me know. Shoot me a text. 229-234-1307. 229-234-1307. Or you can shoot an email. Email is morningdrip@wrto.fm. We do have a call-in number, 912-491-DRIP. That is 912-491-3747. Let me know your thoughts. Did you go to, were you one of the 612,706 visitors that went to the Georgia National Fair 2025? Moving on, a Climate Central study confirms that every U.S. county has warmed since 1970, delaying the first fall freeze nationwide. Let me just throw this out there. If you are a climate change denier, quit listening. Just quit listening. I say this with all the love and care that I can muster, but you're just not smart enough to be listening to this show. If you think that climate change and global warming and all of that, and that human beings are not contributing to the demise of this planet, you don't believe that. If you believe it's a hoax, stop listening. Out of 204 cities analyzed, 88% now experience their first freeze about 2 weeks later on average. Some regions like Reno, Nevada, and Bend, Oregon, see freezes arrive more than a month later, than in the 1970s. Examples of delays, Toledo, Ohio, 29 days later. That was almost a movie title. Philadelphia, 20 days later. Nashville, New York City, about 2 weeks later. The later freeze extends allergy seasons, which allows mosquitoes and pests to thrive longer and reduces fruit and nut crop quality that rely on cold conditions. It also disrupts fall foliage, farming cycles, and local ecosystems, which are dependent on seasonal temperature cues. Since 1980, 181 locations have lost significant chill time, crucial for healthy crop yields. Warmer falls also affect migration and hibernation patterns for birds and animals. And the experts say the data make one thing clear. Climate change has made cool, crisp autumns a thing of the past, forcing communities to adapt to a warmer, longer fall season. That's true. That is true. I still have memories being a young lad here in South Georgia. And though we may have not had snow on the ground for Christmas Day, it was at least cold and sunny or cold and dreary. And when I mean cold, we're talking low 40s, maybe upper 30s, but low 40s, enough that you could throw on like a hoodie and go outside and play in the middle of the day and it not be a problem. Nowadays, I cannot recall the last time we had a Christmas Day that was, say, below 75 or 76 degrees. Most days was over 80. So climate change is real, folks. Believe what you will, but it is real. All right, talking about some other issues. Georgia's housing market saw a surge in canceled home purchases in August of 2025, with 21% of contracts falling through before closing. What are the reasons for these cancellations? Inspection disputes. Buyers found unexpected issues and sellers refused to negotiate. Unrealistic expectations. Some buyers wanted new construction quality in older homes. Financing problems. Buyers hoped for lower mortgage rates, but when the Federal Reserve held rates steady, they backed out. Aggressive renegotiation tactics. Some buyers used inspections to demand steep discounts, prompting sellers to just walk away. Sellers' mistakes, overpricing homes based on last year's market and failing to disclose known issues up front. Buyers' mistakes, using inspections as leverage instead of protection, eroding trust and killing deals. And here's the takeaway from an expert, John Adams, Fox 5 real estate analyst. Transparency and preparation are key. Pre-listing inspections build trust and prevent surprises. I got a note about that. Buyers should approach inspections fairly, not as negotiation tools, and renters aspiring to buy should stay patient, focus on realistic pricing, and work with experienced agents who prioritize honesty over hype. Now, to circle back around to the transparency, there's a new trend of using AI instead of going in and staging your home and spending the money that it would cost to stage the house or maybe do some minor upgrades or what have you. Some folks are now using AI to present the things that they would love to be able to do with the home. There's an instance where there was this real estate agent that was looking at what some folks were doing, and he had this one example of a house that everything about it, all the pictures that you saw online, were AI enhanced. He said, to the tune of some of the changes and upgrades that were made in these artificial pictures, but were not actually done in real life, could cost upwards of around $100,000. So I reached out to my local real estate contacts and asked, have you guys seen this? And one of them got back to me and said, yeah, yep. Actually have run into one house so far here in Tifton that had been on the market for an extreme amount of time. And the issue was that when prospective buyers actually got to see the house in person, they were disappointed because it didn't look like what was online because it had been artificially enhanced using AI. So keep that in mind. DeKalb County Superintendent Devin Horton has been indicted on 17 federal charges, including wire fraud, embezzlement, and tax invasion, tied to his time leading the Evanston-Skokie School District in Illinois. Oh, clarification. Oh, it's tied to his time leading the Evanston-Skokie School District in Illinois. Oh, have I not had enough coffee this morning? Okay, So prosecutors allege Horton issued $280,000 in fake contracts to friends and received over $80,000 in kickbacks between 2020 and 2023. Three others, Antonio Ross, Samuel Ross, and Alfonso Lewis, were also indicted for their roles in the scheme. Horton is additionally accused of stealing $30,000 using his district purchasing card for personal meals, gift cards, and travel expenses. The DeKalb County School Board suspended Horton with pay and appointed Norman Sauce. Okay, that's an... I'm not laughing, but come on, Norman Sauce? As acting superintendent, Horton's attorney said the allegations are several years old and unrelated to his current work in Georgia, where he's credited with improving attendance and graduation rates. If convicted, Horton could face more than 10 years in federal prison and prosecutors seek to forfeit the stolen funds. The Evanston-Skokie School Board confirmed it had cooperated with investigators and said it was deeply troubled and angered by the allegations. Okay, so clarification. Apparently, the second cup of coffee wasn't kicking in. So the indictment has to do with him, his time at Evanston-Skokie School District in Illinois, but he was currently, I say was currently, he was the DeKalb County superintendent, which he was suspended, and I think he's actually resigned at this point, if what I saw this morning was accurate. So my apologies for the confusion. Apparently, I can't freaking read. Or follow context clues sometimes. You know, and with that note, I think we're going to take a break. So we'll be back in a bit. Good morning, everybody. This is the Morning Drip for Thursday, October 16th, 2025. We'll be back.
Still here? Good choice. The Morning Drip rolls on.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Morning Drip. I am Donovan. Today is Thursday, October 16th, 2025. It's still Spooktober. Hey, I can't help it. I like it. I like the fourth quarter. I like all the holidays. All right, moving on. Over half of the states that sent National Guard troops to Washington, D.C. under President Trump's federal law enforcement initiative plan to withdraw them this fall, according to officials. Plan withdrawal dates range from late October through November, signaling a likely drawdown of the months-long deployment. The initiative began in August when Trump issued an emergency executive order citing crime concerns, temporarily placing the D.C. Police Department under federal authority. Side note, and I'm going to editorialize here, it was all made up. It was complete and utter bullshit. Everything, every place that he has sent National Guard saying that it's a hellhole, it's a war-torn zone, complete fabricated lies. But we got to be careful because this is exactly what he's trying to do. He's trying to turn the lie into reality. Because if he can get enough people to push back, then he can go, see, I was right. Yeah, don't fall for it. So anyway, about 2,300 Guard members from eight states plus D.C. remain in the city alongside hundreds of federal law enforcement officers. Georgia, Mississippi, South Carolina, Ohio, and West Virginia have all announced exit timelines. Together, they account for over 80% of the 1,300 out-of-state troops. And let me just say this, again, personal opinion here, but I was very disappointed in our governor for kowtowing to the whims of a wannabe dictator. Honestly, I was very disappointed, and I'm very ashamed of our governor for doing that. South Carolina expects full withdrawal by end of October. Ohio, Georgia, Mississippi, and West Virginia plan to exit by November 30th. Alabama, Louisiana, and South Dakota did not respond to inquiries about their plans. The D.C. National Guard, roughly 1,000 troops, will remain deployed through at least December. And the White House credited the operation with a reduction of crime, though data shows crime rates were already declining beforehand, as we pointed out. There was no there. It was smoke and mirrors, just like it is in every city. Chicago, Portland, L.A. None of what they said was true. Smoke and mirrors, folks. Local officials and residents have criticized the prolonged military presence, calling it not normal and unnecessary. He's trying to make it normal. You know, that's the whole point. This is out of a particular playbook. You do something that's like, holy crap, we've never done this before. And then as you continue to do said thing, and people just finally like go back to their lives. You know, they're trying to do their jobs, make their payments, put food on the table, all this other kind of stuff. This gets shoved to the back of their mind, or they don't even think about it till somebody brings it up on the news or social media or something like that. And then 12 months down the road, let's just say, you're all looking around going, oh, we've always had military patrolling the streets in the United States, haven't we? No. No, we haven't. So that's exactly what he's been trying to do. A lawsuit by D.C.'s Attorney General is challenging the deployment with a court hearing set for October 24th. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser has repeatedly argued that the out-of-state guard presence is an inefficient use of resources. And I agree. I agree. President Donald Trump on October 14th of this year posthumously awarded conservative activist Charlie Kirk the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the nation's highest civilian honor. Ceremony took place in the White House Rose Garden on what would have been Kirk's 32nd birthday. Okay, it's not a rose garden anymore. It's a patio. Erica Kirk, Charlie's widow, accepted the medal and delivered emotional remarks, including a message from their 3-year-old daughter wishing her father a happy birthday. Trump praised Kirk as a fearless warrior for liberty and a beloved leader who galvanized the next generation, calling him a true American hero. And of course, Kirk was fatally shot on September 10, 2025, while speaking at Utah Valley University during the American Comeback Tour, which encouraged debate among college students. Asterisk. I'll come back to that. Trump had announced Kirk's death and immediately vowed to award him the Medal of Freedom, calling him a giant of his generation. Congress previously passed a resolution designating October 14th as a National Day of Remembrance in Kirk's honor. Trump returned from the Middle East early Tuesday after helping broker an Israel-Hamas ceasefire, keeping the event on Kirk's birthday despite considering a postponement. Vice President J.D. Vance and First Lady Erica, what's her name? I can't even remind. Oh, Lord. Trump's wife, anyway, the First Lady, were among attendees, with Trump commending Erica's unbelievable strength and promising to support her and the couple's two young children. Don't believe it. In a year from now, he won't even remember who she is. Kirk was the founder of Turning Point USA, was a key ally of Trump and a leading voice among young conservatives, though often a polarizing figure. That's a nice way of saying it, for his controversial remarks on social and political issues. Trump concluded by saying Kirk's name would be entered forever into the eternal roster of true American heroes. Okay, let me preface what I'm going to say here on this opinion. A, I do not condone the murder of Charlie Kirk. I don't. However, he's not an American hero. He was someone with an agenda, and that in itself is not necessarily a negative thing, but his agenda was white Christian nationalist, basically white supremacy. You could go back and you can look at all of his little sound bites, all of his quotes. And a lot of people look at Charlie Kirk and they were like, you know, he was so inspirational to young people. He just wanted to debate. He believed in free speech. Well, he was not a very good debater because he set the debates up so that he always came out the victor. And the people that think about it, he was 30. He turned 31 or whatever? He turned 32. He was debating 19 and 20-year-olds, all right? So they were already at a disadvantage. So to call him a fair and great debater is very misleading. I would say inaccurate. And the irony here is his widow is taking up his mantle. She became the CEO of Turning Point, though he spewed the standard, very archaic biblical viewpoint that her place should be by his side or in the kitchen, barefoot and pregnant, all of that kind of stuff. He's in that same camp that doesn't believe that women should have the right to vote. So not to shit all over Charlie Kirk, as a husband, as a father, I am saddened that his family will no longer have him around, but don't ever paint him as a patriot or an American hero. No. And I strongly disagree with him getting the highest civilian honor in this Presidential Medal of Freedom. There's other people much more deserving than him. Okay, I'm off my soapbox. MIT became the first university to reject the Trump administration's proposed compact for academic excellence in higher education. The compact offered favorable federal funding and benefits in exchange for universities agreeing to restrictions on academic policies. Nothing like a little blackmail between friends. These policies include capping international student enrollment, freezing tuition for 5 years, adhering to federal definition of gender, prohibiting speech or activity that belittles conservative ideas. So apparently it's okay to have speech or activities that belittle liberal ideas. MIT President Sally Kornbluth, is it Bluth or Bluth, said the agreement would restrict freedom of expression and our independence as an institution, asserting that scientific funding must be based on merit, not ideology. A White House spokesperson, Liz Houston, criticized MIT's decision, accusing universities of bowing to radical left-wing bureaucrats. No, that's nothing to do with that. The compact was sent to 9 universities, including Brown, Dartmouth, Penn, USC, Texas, Vanderbilt, Arizona, and Virginia, which have mostly offered noncommittal or cautious responses. Some, like UVA, formed committees to review the proposal, while others, like Brown and Penn, reaffirmed support for academic freedom and independent governance. Faculty groups, including the American Association of University Professors, AAUP, praised MIT's rejection, calling the compact a loyalty oath and an attempted political intrusion into higher education. Again, blackmail. The UVA Faculty Senate passed a resolution urging its president to reject the compact, citing potential legal violations of free speech and institutional autonomy. The University of Texas system gave the most positive response, saying it was honored to be selected and would review the compact enthusiastically. It would be Texas. It would be Texas. What happened to you, Texas? The proposal has complicated ongoing negotiations between the Trump administration and several universities, deepening tensions over academic freedom, federal influence, and political interference in education funding. Yeah, blackmail. It's simple. It is blackmail, folks. I don't know. This whole thing with the colleges just aggravates the crap out of me. I mean, are universities what they once were 25, 35, 45 years ago? Of course not. I mean, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, you can actually afford to go to college. Now, good luck. And you're better off going to a trade school and learning a skill. Truly, you're better off going and learning a skill at a trade school. Anyway, let me know your thoughts. Text number is 229-234-1307, 229-234-1307. Call-in number is 912-491-DRIP, 912-491-3747, or email the show, morningdrip@wrto.fm. Good morning, everybody. We'll be back.
And we're back. This is the Morning Drip, South Georgia's morning show for independent voices and liberated perspectives. If you've got fogs, gripes, or just want to test if your phone still works, call 912-491-DRIP. Or if you're shy, text us at 229-234-1307. We all bite. Well, not before coffee.
And welcome back to the Morning Drip. I am Donovan. Today is Thursday. It is the 16th of October. Again, Spooktober. Oh, I just can't get past that. All right. Going into our final segment, the Savannah Bananas announced their biggest tour yet of 45 states, 75 Stadium 2026. Banana Ball Championship League. It's expected to draw about 3.2 million fans. Founded by Jesse Cole in 2016, the Banana started a small collegiate summer team before revolutionizing baseball with their Banana Ball entertainment style in 2022. The 2026 season will include 14 MLB stadiums and 10 football stadiums, from Texas A&M's Kyle Field, which has 102,000 seats, to Tennessee's Neyland Stadium, which has 101,000, plus smaller venues like Billings, Montana's Deller Park, I guess is how you pronounce that. I'm not a sports guy. 3,000 seats. And the Banana Ball League features Cole's teams, the Bananas, Party Animals, Firefighters, and Tailgaters, with two new additions, Loco Beach Coconuts, coached by Shane Victorino, featuring a fun beach theme vibe. And let's see, Indianapolis Clowns, led by Ryan Howard, a revival of the historic Negro Leagues team, once home to Hank Aaron and Satchel Paige, in partnership with the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. Cole says the goal is to bring banana ball to every corner of the U.S., ensuring anyone can drive to a game within a few hours. The 2026 season will open in February, with preseason games followed by a 50-game regular season, April to September, culminating in the Banana Bowl on October 10, 2026. A new equalizer rule will award an extra point to the team with more trick plays through the first 8 innings, keeping the competition lively. Despite the surge in popularity, ticket prices will remain the same, though millions are expected to join the ticket lottery within 48 hours of the announcement. Cole says the long-term vision is to make banana ball a global sport, with youth leagues and international teams, though no overseas games are planned for 2026. That, you know, I've seen their videos. I've seen snippets of some of their stuff on YouTube. It's pretty funny. I mean, that's the kind of baseball game I think I would enjoy going and watching. I don't care about regular baseball, football, basketball, tennis, none of that. Don't care. I'm a nerd. I like tech stuff. But the goofiness of the banana, Savannah Bananas, yeah, I find that enjoyable. What about you? Have you ever been to one of their games? Let me know. Gold prices have soared past $4,000 an ounce, climbing nearly 60% since the start of 2025, prompting what they're calling a 21st century gold rush as Americans sell heirlooms and jewelry for cash. Jewelry stores and refineries report record traffic, with sellers bringing in family heirlooms, rather, coins and broken jewelry to take advantage of the surge. Exclusive jewelers in Manhattan say it's buying twice as much gold as last year, while Cascading Refining and W.E. Mowry Refining also report major increases in incoming materials. The surge reflects investor anxiety over a weakening U.S. dollar, rising federal debt, the ongoing government shutdown, and economic slowdown fears. These are all pushing demand for gold as a safe haven asset. High prices have made gold jewelry harder to sell, forcing designers to shrink sizes, use lower karat gold, or mix in cheaper materials to keep items affordable. Retail gold sales are down about 20% as consumers balk at the prices. Small hoop earrings now cost around $300 to $400, double their former price range. Refineries report a 25 to 75% increase in gold and precious metal intake, with some selling wholesale overseas due to weaker domestic demand. Analysts warn that the boom has already led to an uptick in counterfeit goods, so sellers and buyers alike must exercise caution. And for some Americans, the rush to sell gold isn't just profit-driven, it's a financial lifeline amid a tough job market and economic uncertainty. It's interesting, for sure. All right, we're going to end today's show on this note and a question that I have for you, which you can answer by emailing morningdrip@wrto.fm, or you can text 229-234-1307, 229-234-1307. Have you purchased a vehicle this year, or did you purchase one in 2024? I'm curious to know. I haven't purchased a vehicle since 2013. So we have a 2003 Ford Explorer. We have a 2013 Ford Focus. And my son, a couple of years ago, bought a 2003 Ford Ranger, which still sits here because he lives in Seattle and he couldn't take it with him. But when he comes to visit, vacation, whatever, it's still here for him to drive. Well, the reason why I'm asking this is because a new report over at Road and Track says that the average new vehicle price, also known as the ATP, in the U.S. hit a record $50,080 in September of 2025, surpassing the $50,000 mark for the first time, per Kelley Blue Book. The ATP rose 2.1% from August and 3.6% year over year, despite rising dealer incentives, averaging 7.4%, $3,700 per vehicle, the highest this year. The average MSRP also climbed to $52,183, which is up 4.2% from September of 2024. Luxury vehicles and electric vehicles, EVs, are driving the price increases. EVs now make up 11.6% of new car sales, with an average price of $58,124. That's up 3.5% from just a month earlier, in August. Over 60 luxury models priced above $75,000 sold 94,000 units, representing 7.4% of the market. That's up from 6% a year ago. Porsche, and of course it'd be Porsche, had the highest ATP at $119,853, while Mitsubishi had the lowest at $34,356. Interestingly enough, though, Mitsubishi's prices jumped 34.4% year over year. That is the largest gain in this study. EV sales hit a record 437,487 units in Q3 2025, and this was partly from buyers rushing to use the expiring federal tax credits. Analysts cite tariffs, rising EV adoption, luxury demand. Those are the major cost drivers. Ford's $65,000 plus pickup trucks, symbolizing the new market norm. So basically, if you're going to go buy a truck, expect to spend about $65,000. Now, I know this is not comparing apples to apples, but when we bought our first 2,000 square foot double wide mobile home in 1996, it was $55,600. So here we are in 2025. Having to pay more than my first home that my wife and I ever purchased together, costing more, a vehicle, a truck. And I know inflation and all of that, but this is absurd. This is absurd. I mean, my Ford Focus, I believe, was $18,000 in 2013. I haven't checked the prices recently, but I'm pretty sure if you can get a Ford Focus, if they still make it, I'm not sure. But something in that same category is going to run you over $30,000. It's ridiculous. Tesla and Hyundai have begun offering lower price models in their EVs, but experts say new car prices are likely to persist into 2026. Ultimately, the days of the $20,000 car, they're gone. They're absolutely gone. Not for brand new. Not for brand new. And I mean, there was a while there that used cars, the pricing on those went absolutely nuts. I mean, so did the housing market all during the COVID pandemic and all of that, but man. And I'd said, I think last week, one of the best pieces of advice I think I've read anywhere is about around 60 years of age, if you can swing it, buy yourself a brand new vehicle, hopefully with cash. Hopefully you don't have to finance it, but if you do, you do. And then that way, when you do retire, you have a vehicle that's probably going to last as long as you do. It'll probably outlast you, unless you're William Shatner or somebody, or Betty White that's, you know, Betty White almost made it to 100. There's a chance for Shatner. How can you tell I'm a nerd? All right, folks. That is it for the Thursday edition of The Morning Drip here on WRTO.FM Radio Tift. I hope you enjoyed this morning's show. I hope you joined us live. If not, you can always go to WRTO.FM, click on the Morning Drip link at the top, and you will have these episodes in podcast form, usually the same day that they're recorded, but, you know, maybe a day after. But anyway, join us every Tuesday and Thursday morning around 7 a.m., and I say around, for the Morning Drip live. And again, if you've got any comments or questions, critiques, you just want to bitch at me about my opinions that you don't agree with because I'm a little left of center politically, you can email the show. That email address is the Morning Drip, not the, but Morning Drip at WRTF.FM. WRTO. I swear, man. Coffee, come on. Morning Drip at WRTO.FM. And the text number is 229-234-1307. 229-234-1307. The call-in number, which is only active during the show, is 912-491-DRIP. 912-491-3747. All right, everybody. I hope you have a wonderful Thursday and a Friday and a fantastic weekend. We'll see you next Tuesday for the Morning Drip. I'm Donovan. Everybody take care.